He should have been hauled off, I reckon, about 10 balls before that. He actually showed a real lack of intent to actually even try and score.
But no one at Cricket Australia, and even now, their past chairman just squabbling with current chairman. It's such a messy situation that I think should have been addressed 3 years ago.
If he just says, this is the situation, I'm resigning from captain, well, let's do the week or 2 weeks of turmoil and then we can move on with the cricket.
I said, oh, Dennis, let's let you know that it's time. I'm going to pull the pin and retire. He paused for a bit. He looked at me and says, geez, I think you made the right call.
On RSN Central, welcome to the Monday Forum.
Jimmy Bartel, hello to you.
G'day, Gareth. Hey, I just noticed something about you before you launch into it. You're very good at wearing merch, aren't you? Like, every time I see you, you're representing the brand really
RSN
well.
RSN 927, 100%.
Yeah, you're a walking sponsored billboard, aren't you?
It's the only hat I've got. They gave it to me as well. What about... Jimmy, who are you sponsored by these days?
Nobody.
You sure?
I've got the blank cricket bat, Glenn McGrath style. Just waiting for a sticker to go on the cricket
bat. I thought you had a sponsorship with Bonds or something like that.
Yeah, I was clearly just laying the foundation before they upgraded very heavily to the great Dustin Martin. So very happy to step aside for that legend.
Monday's an important day for you because of the NFL.
It is. Yep. It is.
And it's been such a weird old season this year, especially when I'm talking to my mates who love the NFL and they start punting on it.
Yes.
And they've been a little frustrated. There's been a few teams that just haven't turned up.
Yeah, it's been difficult because no one's really separated themselves from the pack. Like you think games should go the way they normally do, and NFL is a bit like AFL sort of in the olden days. If you were unsure, you just lean into the home side.
Yeah.
But we're seeing week after week, four or five like clear outsiders, you know, to use tab betting. Your $1.20 versus the $3.50. The $3.50 is getting up. And so what's going on at the moment is there's movement at quarterback still in a lot of teams. There's injuries in defence. And it almost goes back to the year when the New York Giants, one of the years they rolled the almost unbeatable New England Patriots. They were 8-8 going into the playoffs, and it feels like one of those years that just get hot at the right time. It's not as clear as we saw just the other year where it was Kansas City Chiefs, Tampa Bay, once they got through their teething problems with Tom Brady and all the cast who came from everywhere, just cleared out, and it was always sort of destined for those two. Yeah. So, you know, the Bills, the Chargers, the Rams should be stacked with what they've got on defense, and now that they've got Matthew Stafford, who was for a perennial loser, people are going, oh, he might be a decent quarterback. He might be just playing, you know, in the wrong side. So it's still a bit to play.
So is that with... So when you're talking about those professional organisations in the States and with the NFL, is that luck? Is it management with their injuries? Is it players stepping up and improving? Sometimes COVID getting in the way of sides progressing?
Yeah, I think that's it at the moment. But then also, I think it's going to come down to, if we'll reference another sport, when you go into a Grand Slam tennis tournament, how important the draw is with the seedings.
Yeah.
Who are you going to meet across? Because some teams will just cover another team beautifully, and it will happen throughout the playoffs.
So you got the Buccaneers, they won, defeating the Colts today, 38-31.
But it haven't been great in the last few weeks.
But they've got Brady, who knows how to win a Super Bowl. But how long can he keep going for?
Yeah, he reckons he's going to defeat time. That's what he's selling. He's selling eternal eliteness in sport.
He's the most extraordinary athlete that I've come across in world sport. I know that this Tiger that keeps on coming back, and there's been Michael Jordan and LeBron James and Djokovic and Federer and those type of players. But Tom Brady's the most fascinating and most extraordinary athlete of my time.
Yeah, well, but he's not what you typically describe as an elite. He's an elite athlete, so I'm going to contradict myself here a bit.
Yeah.
He's an extraordinary athlete to do what he does, but he doesn't rely on athleticism. He beats you with IQ, like sporting IQ, knows how to manage his body better than anybody else. And this is where those, I think it's been the last 10 years, when you look at all the absolute pinnacle of sport. You said tennis, we go NFL, we go LeBron James. The amount of money these guys spend on the off-the-court stuff, like there's professional chefs, personal trainers, they know minute loads, they know what weights program, all the little, call it the one percenters.
Yep.
They just extend out. But then that's met with generational talent, of course. Let's not diminish the talent.
But it does help. Like LeBron spends $1.2 million on his body outside of what the Lakers provide him.
Yeah, but you think about it, though. Like, that's $1.2 million of a $40 million playing contract, not including endorsements, to get you another year to make $40 million probably
makes
again.
Sense. Yeah. And Tom Brady, when you've watched those documentaries on him, like, he wakes up, he's got his own physio, stretches him every day. His diet is as strict as they come.
And it helps. He's got a, it's almost borderline psychotic drive to win. Like, the guy's still bitter that he was the seventh quarterback drafted in his draft. He'd pick one in 99. he keeps going, channeling the six names that went ahead of him.
Every time about this draft, or this time every year, that everybody's saying he's too old and the Buccaneers can't win and Tom can't do it. And if he leaves the Patriots, then he won't be able to get the success like he has at the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
And then he plays that video with Gronk after he wins each playoff game. Yeah. And you think,
yeah, it's just more gasoline on the fire for it.
Yeah.
It just keeps him going again.
Do they win it this year?
That'll be tough. Yeah. I tend to, in sports, use the Ric Flair analogy. Remember the Nature Boy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that, yeah. But he has one of the best lines is to be the man, you've got to beat the man. And how often is that true in sport?
Yeah.
And we'll use AFL. To be the best, you've got to beat Melbourne. Like, have Melbourne gotten worse?
We don't know yet.
I think they'll get better.
Yeah.
Because they'll get stronger. You know, Ben Brown fits into that system even more. Some defenders settle down spots. They had a couple of guys who had only played about 10 games who won that premiership.
Do you think with the draft now and the way that it's sorted out back to the AFL is that we'll see sides get on a roll for two or three seasons like Richmond, because they'll have that playing group that they'll have, like, you've got the Petrarca and the Olivers and...
You're channeling a bit of Gary Ayres there. Yeah, Petrarca's, the Olivers, your Gawns.
The Gawns and all, you know, that Jimmy, they're in that, group. Yep. And so it's hard for other sides. The other sides are trying to catch them. They might be two or three years away, and then Geelong and maybe even Richmond have just gone over the hill a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's very difficult to beat a side that actually believes what, you know, the coaches are saying and doing.
Yeah.
And you capture that momentum. We saw that with Richmond. Once they captured the whole idea of every single player is important, like, we know Dustin Martin's the superstar.
Yeah.
And the very early doors, they had Alex Rance and Cochin and Rewalton, all those guys, the champions, the big four or five, however you want to put it. But I remember going to the MCG the year they first, you know, their first flag. I think they were playing the Hawks, and it was quarter time, and they were up by only about a goal or two, but you could see them at the quarter time huddle. Those big four or five were getting around, you know, the role players.
Yeah.
Like, not to diminish what they're doing. They're very good players. But they all understood that if that guy goes really well and just plays his role, I can thrive in my role, and the knock-on effect across the team. They're a very, very tough side to beat. And you got that from Melbourne as the season went along. Like, Christian Salem and all these sort of guys end up being all Australian, but they were doing their team role first. They didn't have to go look after their own patch. They all realised, you know, what they say, rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
You can see it happening. And then you win the grand final the way you do as the D's. You go into any game going, well, the way we played just wins.
I was listening to Simon Goodwin on the Breakfast Club a couple of weeks ago when he was in Shepparton. And he said that in 2019, it was a disaster.
Mm.
Like, they didn't buy in. They didn't prepare well. They were embarrassing.
Yeah.
They missed the finals in 20, but he said the signs that I saw was positive, and I was looking forward to going into 2021. Within 2 weeks of the preseason, he knew that he had something special here. How come playing groups can't just do that like 3 years ago? Like, what is it? And it happened at the Cats, I think.
Yeah.
Is it a flick of the switch where you just get it, or you mature, or
Bit of that. And then you need to see it working. And for coaches, they need to be able to show it's working. And then it's how you coach it. So you've got to celebrate it.
Yeah.
So you've got to celebrate all those. They might seem like insignificant moments within a game, but then if they're explained, well, that the result of you doing this helps this happen. You know, the old little butterfly effect, you know. Gareth, by you going over and channeling your man to the boundary side, means that guy kicks a slow kick down the boundary, which then allows me as a halfback to come off an intercept. which allows me to rebound back up through the middle, and we get a very easy goal.
Yeah. So you see it, then you believe in it, and you
repeat it,
and then
it
becomes fun, I guess.
Yeah. But if you could capture momentum, you could own any building in Melbourne,
yep.
Because that's the most difficult thing to capture in sport. We hear it all the time. He's got momentum, can't be stopped.
Yeah.
And then the counter to that is if you can stop momentum. Like Melbourne, after they kicked their third centre bounce goal against the Dogs in the grand final, if you could go out to the Dogs and go, can you stop this? Well, could you, you know, just do this? You'd be a genius.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just can't do anything about
it. That was the criticism of David Teague. Like, he couldn't coach his side to stop momentum when other sides used to get on a roll and kick five or six straight, and it happened too often.
Yeah, but Carlton's boys get a little bit touchy when you criticise them. But structurally, they weren't.
Just poor.
And it was a bit of both. I think when I watch Carlton, I'm a big believer in Carlton because I think they have talent. And I've seen glimpses of the good.
Yeah.
So I don't think you waste your time on, you know, players that can't do it. But I can see it with Carlton players. I'm very lucky during all this COVID period. I was one of the handful of people who was allowed to go on to live games, yeah. You know, covering it for radio and TV. So you can see the full ground shot, so not just the TV angle. That sometimes you'd want to, on the Monday, if you're a Carlton coach, you need to sit with a player and you got to work out a couple of things. It's like, do you know how to do it? Because
yep.
If you don't, let's go out in the track and do it. Are you choosing not to do it? Which then we have to work on on that.
Well, they're not going to tell you that, are they?
But some might. Just go, I might be gassed and I'm thinking I'll just get the next kick instead of going and defending. So you've just got to work out what the actual problem is.
Yeah. What would you do with Patrick Cripps?
Play him in the centre.
Yeah. Do you think Mick McGowan sits in that chair every Thursday during the football season? He's critical of Cripps because he believes he doesn't go both ways.
Yeah, but you can get exposed that way if your whole team is not collectively defending. Yeah. Everyone gets exposed.
Yeah.
But the focus is on him because he's the champion and the captain. But if you did it's the worst camera angle if you're an AFL player. You almost want to suplex the guy who created down the ground footage because you cannot hide.
You can't
hide. You're like, oh damn, got me. But it's not just a Cripps problem. It's like just what I was saying. So if they had greater pressure on the ball, it gives Cripps more time to get away from the stoppage. So Cripps has either got to be the one to put the initial pressure.
Yes.
Which if he's doing that, well, can we improve his initial pressure or his initial decision-making? It's like I was saying, you sit down on Monday.
Yeah.
How can we improve that? If he's not close enough, well, which of his teammates are doing that, which allows him time to cut off the release, the handball release? If he can't do that, well, how's he getting to the next one? So it might be a decision-making thing.
Yeah. So it's not. It could just be. Could it be his body as well?
Yeah, well, I was curious why in the latter half of the year they even bothered playing.
Why did they?
I don't know. And I get why he wants to play. He's the captain. I've got to be there. Yeah. So it would have been difficult for him and the coaching staff because you don't want to be seen to be, I'm just checking out of the year, which I think he's earned enough brownie points from the wider football public to think this guy never shirks it.
Yep.
So I think if it was just... they had kilos of tape wrapped around his body going into a game. It was just... I would have just said, almost save himself. Like, can you just... Last few weeks... Yeah.
So at this time of the year, Jimmy, did you have any conversations with any of your teammates or to say, all right then, mate, I think you can be a superstar here and I don't think you're getting enough out of yourself?
Well, the most famous of that conversation was when Gaz Jr., it was when leading teams, whole thing came to our footy club. That was pretty much the feedback. He got sat in a chair by himself out the front and all the teammates just said, you could be...
The best.
The best.
Yeah.
Like, it's as clear as day, but we just don't think you're pulling your finger out.
Yeah. Did you get frustrated before that talk with Gaz when you were playing with him?
Not really, because I understood where... Because Gaz thought he was doing everything he could, but he probably just wasn't doing what other teammates thought he could.
Yeah.
Like, I played underage football at the Geelong Falcons with Gaz, so I was riding shotgun with him since I was 16, so I knew what he was doing, but... I think he needed to realise, well, I could be a premier midfielder that goes forward, not just... Because when he started Geelong, he was just sitting on the half-forward flank.
Yeah.
Super creative, still a very solid player, but sometimes you just need to be pushed a little bit further out of your comfort zone.
Do you think leading teams, that would work in today's environment with our kids these days?
It all depends on the dynamic of your group. So I've heard different feedback on that style of the 360-degree feedback. It worked really well for our group because... We had the character makeup who embraced it and were probably at the right time to, to really embrace that type of leadership or sort of forum or style. Yep. But I've heard it at other teams and businesses and things like that where it's been
nightmare,
tough because people just aren't ready for feedback.
Yeah.
We've all got mates. You know, when you go down to the pub and you're hanging on a mate, you know which mate's going to go, run in, throw it back, and which one's going to cry in his pot.
Yeah. And we've all been, like, some people who give me feedback and, oh, geez, I didn't know I was that bad. Or you probably nearly get disappointed in yourself thinking, well, I need to go and do that. But I didn't think that I would have, like, it's nearly, sometimes you think, well, am I really that bad or am I really that late? Like, some people can handle it and some people can't.
I think while the environment was really good down at Geelong, it was outlined from the start, you call it your rules of engagement, was the fact that it's the message.
Yeah.
It's not personal. It's coming from that person who's telling you the message. It's not Gareth telling me. Gareth's saying it on behalf of, say, that smaller group who came up with 6 or 8. So it's not Gareth doesn't like me or this. And
what makes you better.
Yeah. But then the important bit is to follow up from it. So that was the key. So, for example, I go, Gareth, I don't think you're putting in enough at training. You got noodle arms.
Yeah.
You need to do some more upper body strength, which will help you be a better player in the contest, blah, blah, blah. But that's the message. And then you've got to receive it. Oh, Jimmy hates me.
Yeah.
He's just doing the message. But then you've got to have, like, direction after that. So it's, well, how are we going to fix it?
Yeah.
And then someone will go, hey, I do extra weight session. Gareth, come jump in with me.
Yeah.
And then it's the follow-up. And then, then there'll always be, who's going to help him through it? And I'll go, I'll help him through it.
Yeah. It's like anything in sport. Like, a jockey gets told he's it was a bad ride. But we'll go and sit down with him and explain why it's a bad ride. Like, Gareth, you say yeah, I'm an art too much, or you don't say you tease. All right, then we'll sit back and you listen to your tape back and you go, oh, now I can pick it up. You can see, visualise it, and you get better. Is that the better message that you think works in today's environment?
Yeah, but I think you can still get the same message across, but it's the delivery for different people. So some people just take the brutal feedback and they, like, dig their heels in and they get better. Others need the gentle approach. But the issue with AFL football, if you are halfway through the third quarter and there's one point in the game and your teammate yells at you, you've got to create an environment where, Matt Scarlett yelling at me to cut off the release mark. It's not Matt Scarlett going, geez, I hate Jimmy. He just wants me to do something to help him out. And then at quarter time, it's important, then at three-quarter time, he comes up to me and goes, hey, next time, I need that done.
Don't make me yell at you, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be frightening already.
Yeah, I would.
What was your position in footy?
I was all over the place. Yeah, depending on the season.
Would you fail a few positions? Yeah, they couldn't find a spot.
Yeah, on the ball. Depends how fit I was.
Tagging?
No, I never tagged. Or maybe I did once or twice. I was a very in and out type of player, depending on the day, really, Jimmy. I would have been a frustrating player.
You were in the side, but you're out of the game. Yeah.
10:49. We'll come back and we'll talk about the Australian cricket side straight after this. You're with Gareth Hall and Jimmy Partell. This is our Monday Forum. 0416 90 50 52 to join our conversation on RSN Central today. Hey, Jimmy, what about the Australian captaincy at the moment? When I talk to my mates, if you went into a pub now and you had 10 of your mates and you asked them, should Steve Smith coach this, captain our Australian cricket side once again? You would have, I think, 7 out of 3 would say yes. They would say he's moved on, he's done his time.
Hmm.
What's your thoughts on this? Because there's some people that are really vocal saying that he should never captain. He should never be in any leadership role for the Australian cricket side or Australian cricket ever again.
Yeah, well, I think that's more reflective of the regard that we hold the Australian cricket captain. We hold it to a level of the Prime Minister, don't we?
Yeah, but that's wrong sometimes, I think.
Well, it can't be sometimes, and that's, I guess, the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
It's either all the time, so you're either absolutely cold, you made a mistake, you broke the rules, you can never be captain. That's the regard. You've got to be squeaky clean on and off the field.
I don't like it. That's crap, because if he's not making decisions on our livelihoods like the Prime Minister is, it's like could have the best cricket brain.
Which I agree with, but that's what I'm sort of like posing the question is it depends how you actually view the Australian cricket captain. The ones who are the strongest against Stephen Smith ever holding a leadership role see the Australian cricket captain as you're the next most important person in our country. Like, I know it's sport and it's not politics, but people do hold the Australian cricket captain to a level like no other sporting leadership role. So then you can't. But if you're a person which sounds like you are, and I'm a little bit this way, I think what he went through and the punishment, not only the actual cricketing punishment, but the social and the public embarrassment, and he's got to carry it with him forever. I think it's been pretty brutal what he's gone through, and he served his time. He's been nothing but respectful. He's turned that period. He was out visiting schools. He shared his story. He's laid on the sword enough times, hasn't he?
I can never understand why people, if a person makes a mistake like Steve Smith did, and it was a big mistake, I know that, but then he does what he does and he goes through the period where he had to take time off, and he did a lot of great, he did a lot of great work off the cricket field as well. So he's made the mistake, he's learnt from that mistake, and he's come back into the cricketing landscape. So I think he'd be a better captain than he was when he was the previous captain, because he's learnt from what he learnt from the mistakes that he did, say, when he was captain the first time around.
I 100% agree with that. Life experience will definitely make him a better captain because it gives him balance.
Yeah.
But there'll be also an argument to counter that why can't he just be a leader without a title? Like, I have no doubt when Pat Cummins is bowling his overs,
Smith will be captain. Yeah,
you're just without the title. And if you're a good team and you're a good cricket team, like, Cummins will carry the captaincy title. But you can't tell me that it's not Cummins sitting down with Lyon, Smith, and even Warner.
Yeah,
maybe one other, working out plans. You know, at lunch break, all that sort of stuff. What are we doing? Are we declaring? Are we putting three slips in here? Are we getting under his skin? Are we going dead silent? Are we bouncing the ball in four times to rough it up? All that sort of stuff.
Do you think that Cricket Australia and Cricket Tasmania, well, they're at war at the moment, how they handled the Tim Payne situation? Cricket Tassie were strong in their response with the media statement saying that Cricket Australia just have let down Tim Payne.
Yeah, but I can see where Cricket Tassie's going, because they thought this matter had been handled by themselves.
Yeah.
So it's a bit difficult because Cricket Tassie, they're throwing their arms around one of their sons, and they feel like he's been just left out to dry.
Mm-hmm. Which he has in a way, I think, anyway, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is the world we live in. Like, there would have been 50 articles on Tim Payne in a week.
Yeah. More than that.
From one publication, I reckon.
Yeah, more than that. And it was fascinating how the media actually, how they dealt with it, and Tim Payne's had to take some time off cricket now, and we probably won't ever get to see him play.
He would have thought he and his family will think the walls are closing in on him.
Yeah.
It was relentless.
Yeah. And you've probably been through that with your life too, Jimmy.
Absolutely.
How difficult is it? Like, is it a time where you just don't want to leave your house? You don't want to answer your phone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. But, so, yeah, I do feel for him and his family, importantly. So,
yeah.
But even, like, the extended thing, like, his mum and dad, his wife's mum and dad, his mates, they'd be hounded. Everyone wants to know, like.
100%. And you get text messages from, but eventually it does get better.
Yeah, the sun still comes up the next day and things like that. And that's why, for me, like, I'd love to see Tim Payne play cricket again. I know he's recovering from the injury as well, and also he's got all this personal stuff going on. I just want to see him play cricket, because cricket has been so good to him that it'd be nice for him to finish still with the love of the game of cricket. So it's not like he goes out.
This is what I would love, and it would never happen. Australia lead 4-0 in that test series against England, and Perth's 50-50 whether they're going to hold the test, because regarding if they're going
your
to...
Your mate.
Yeah, my mate McGowan. Which they should really have made the call on. Now, I can't still work out, like, McGowan. I think that before the Ashes test series starts, you need to know where the fifth test is going to be played.
Hmm.
So it looks like Tassie's not going to be able to host it.
Why not?
Because they, I think they're out of the ball game at the moment because they thought maybe it would be the farewell test for Tim Payne. That won't happen.
But they missed out on the test that they're going to play against Afghanistan.
I know, but I think with the way that the cricket board, the Tassie cricket board, reacted to the Tim Payne situation, I don't think they're...
They've been already told you, you reckon?
Yeah, I don't think they're best mates with the Australian cricket board at the moment.
Might be a way the Australian cricket board can maybe butter up back the other way.
I think that fifth test we played at Sydney, it'll be a day-nighter. I think Melbourne want it, Sydney want it. They can't if they're not going to host it at Hobart, please don't host it at Canberra.
No,
but that's what they were thinking. So I think it'll be at Sydney.
Beautiful place though, Canberra. It's got a lot of memberships for the GWS Giants, and we love the contribution to the local government there.
A few SMSs coming through. Why don't the Australian cricket team follow suit of the AFL and have half the team as captains? That's from Lee. It's a good point.
I actually do like that, but I get a bit funny when I see leadership teams of 12. I was like, everyone's a leader. It's like a bit of Oprah Winfrey about it. You be a leader. Yeah. Everyone's a leader.
Does your AFL captain have an influence on your playing group? For Joel Selwood, for instance, would he have a different impact to, say, other captains like a Ben McAvoy at Hawthorn?
Yeah. Like, how you're asking, does it have an impact as in the way players approach?
Correct. The way that he sets up the culture for your football club, or do you think that...
Well, that's normally how they get the captaincy.
Correct.
Because there's always, like, questionnaires or little surveys that all clubs go through, normally in about January.
Yeah.
And, that's why, you always hear coaches and footy managers, the values and all this sort of stuff. They normally do a whole team, whole group voting on who best represents those values of the club.
Yep. What makes a great captain?
Well, it depends. There's different captains for different times, I think.
Yeah. Like Luke Hodge, would say, would be a different captain to...
He would have been a different captain to Sam Mitchell.
Yep.
Like Joel Selwood was a different captain from Tom Harley and Cameron Ling. They're just different personalities, and it's got to fit the group as well.
Yeah. Stevie J make a good captain?
In one sort of part of it. He's a brilliant mind of football. He's attacking. He's aggressive. Always played well in big games. Most stubborn individual, like refuses to give in. I saw that guy. He was late for a time trial, so they made him run the 2K time trial by himself. And he just went so hard for 5 laps. So hard. Yeah. He ran an unbelievable time. Because he's just so driven. Like, he's the biggest competitor you ever meet.
It's like Shane Warne. Like, you're talking about great leaders or great cricket minds. I would have loved to have seen him captain the Australian Test team. Now, he doesn't fit talking about having Australian captains live a certain way. He probably doesn't fit that fold. Hmm. But as a cricket mind, and when you listen to him on the commentary, he would have made a wonderful captain.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the art of leadership, if you're a captain too, is identifying the different personalities in your group. So having a Shane Warne in your leadership group, or Steve Johnston use that example, they're great in your leadership group because you never win a premiership with 22 good citizen football dorks. You'll never win.
No.
And some captains don't get that because a lot of captains are the guys who... they're there an hour early, they weigh their food, everything's right, they clean shave every day, like they're the Clark Kent of footy, like they're like Superman before he puts the cape on. They're immaculately presented, they speak well. But a 22 of them will never win you a premiership.
You need to have a captain that can understand, well, Jimmy needs a beer on Wednesday, and I'm going to let him have a couple of beers. Yeah.
So, but they're also very clear in what the parameters or values or team rules are, and you set them as like bumper bars.
Yeah.
And you can be any personality in between those bumpers. But as soon as you step outside of that, that's when we've got an issue.
Ricky Ponting never had a squeaky clean record with the bourbon and beefsteak incident.
Yeah, he caught one in there. But that was before he was captain.
Yeah, he was only a kid.
Yeah. We've all been silly as kids.
Hi, Gareth. In relation to the lads backing in Smith in the pub, it's because the average bloke will cut a man some slack and they can relate to those who have made mistakes, look for redemption and become a better man moving forward. That's from Steve in Richmond. Totally agree.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Like, how much is it? Like, he's going to get punished for this for the rest of his life. Like, as soon as something happens similar... What do you do as a journalist? Oh, let's go reference all the other ones.
And then you get this. Like, Smith was in charge. He represents all Australians. He cheated, and it reflects on us all. We don't cheat. Also, the best batter doesn't always have to be the captain. I understand that, and they did. The sandpaper was probably a disgrace. It was embarrassing, and it was like, you think, what were you thinking? But you can't tell me, and this is my argument, everyone's played cricket before. You've all cheated people playing cricket. If you're playing park cricket, test cricket, shield cricket, I would bet you any amount of money that someone in your cricket side had cheated with the ball tampering. They would have put sunscreen on the cricket ball. They would have thrown it into the ground. Especially in park cricket. Everyone, lollies, everything that you could think of when it comes to ball tampering, they would have tried it.
I've played a number of cricket games where
I did it. Sunscreen bowling, like you put it in, like I probably didn't even realise it at the time, but and then you
the ice block under correct. The wicket. I've played a couple of those games on the sides where it's incredible. It's been 40 degrees for the last week, and all of a sudden it's really wet on a good length.
Yeah, so that's why like ball tampering people like. And the sandpaper is going to extremes. Like it was ridiculous.
But been picking at the seam for 100 years. Yep. Like Vernon Philander, the South African who bowled about 112 k's an hour, but he always used to destroy Australia. He used to always walk back to the top of his mark. He got done a couple of times for picking at the seam.
And do you know what, Evan, like they were, and this is getting to dangerous territory here, and this is all alleged, by the way. So they're going at Steve Smith. He was our captain. But Patrick Cummins and the bowlers and all that, if they didn't know what the ball was doing, you know what I mean? They're using the ball.
Oh, yeah. You are floating into...
That's alleged. But that's only alleged. But then you would think, if you play cricket, you know?
You look at it.
5 minutes past 11. Hey, Jim, it's a lot of fun. Who are we backing in the NFL?
What, to win it all?
No, there's a couple more games today.
Seahawks have got some value because Russell Wilson's had some injuries and he had an absolute turkey the game before and he's game back. Just he might have a nice little uplift. Right,
we might do that, Jimmy. Thanks for that, mate. Appreciate it.
It's been fun.
Have a wonderful day. Enjoy the rest of your week and happy birthday as well.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
There. Happy birthday, Jimmy. 6 minutes past 11.